It's a great pleasure for me to be here today. Thank you for the introduction. Indeed, I work at the Stevens Institute of Technology in New Jersey in the lab of Dr. Mehmet Kurt. But I have to warn you that I'm here in a rather unorthodox role today, because the work I'm about to present is not directly my own work, but rather is due to the efforts of collaboration partners of ours from the University of Stanford, the radiology department. So Itamar, who's the lead author of this work, couldn't be here today, but he was very excited to present the result of his research to you, which is why he asked me to do my best to try and explain it to you. So before we start, none of us has any financial interest regarding the subject matter, I'd just like to point out, but this is not so interesting. So we are here these days to talk about MRE. We are learning about this beautiful technique and thinking about a lot of different ways in which we can make the brain or other soft organs move in order to understand something about their mechanical properties, right? But when we think about it, the brain already displays some intrinsic motion, which is due to the cardiac pulsatility. So I'm talking here about extremely subtle micrometer range cardioballistic motions, which depend on cardiac function, the properties of tissue, the compliance of vasculature, and especially on flow and pressure dynamics. Now, in a lot of pathological states, such micro movements can be significantly altered, which is why I would be very interested in learning something about them and being able to observe and quantify them. But unfortunately, conventional MR imaging lacks the sensitivity to detect such subvoxel or, let's say, noise level motions, okay? So our colleagues in Stanford started wondering, is there a way we can use this cardiac pulsatility as an intrinsic motion activator during imaging? And this is not a new idea. Some people in this very audience have been working on that already. But what they tried to do in Stanford is to use CINE MRI data to observe intrinsic motion. Now, just as a very quick reminder of how the technique works, in CINE MRI, we are interested in acquiring a movie of the brain during a heart cycle, basically, so that the RR interval is subdivided into a high number of frames, typically up to 80, 90, 100. And then different lines of a K-space are sampled over different cardiac pulses, so that when we stitch everything back together, we can reconstruct one image for each of these colorful time intervals, okay? And we can assemble them together to make a movie. Now, even assuming we have a movie of such microvibrations, what are we gonna do with it, right? Movements are too small to see. Well, this is where we borrow some video magnification techniques, the first of which has been developed very recently in 2012 at MIT. There's a beautiful tech talk, by the way, should you be interested, where they show how is moving, you can see that. You see how in the input video, we have, for example, an eye that is not moving at all, and when we amplify the motion, we see a lot of very small displacements. Now, how does this technique work? In a nutshell, in a very quick overview, we basically have an input movie, which is for us a BSSFP CINE movie of a brain, okay, which we have retroactively rebinned to match the cardiac phase. These images are specially decomposed using the Laplacian pyramid approach into different harmonics, each of which is then bandpass filtered in the temporal domain in order to cover the reasonable harmonics of a heartbeat. And finally, we can amplify such different frequencies in order to stitch them back together and create an output movie, which is now going to show displacements of the harmonics of our interest. This is all very nice. What does it mean? This is what it means. Here is an example of EVM amplified MRI, in which we can see our input video is this balanced steady state free precession acquired on the brain. And the AMRI output allows us to very clearly observe the motion of brain structures upon heart pulsatility, especially where they are most pronounced, which is in the cerebellum, around the spinal cord, etc. So this is already, I find, a very charming thing to see. The work of Itamar mostly focused on optimizing the algorithm for the video amplification. So instead of using the standard, let's say, EVM approach, he worked with phase-based amplification. Now I beg you, don't think of a phase of MRI, because this is just a completely different phase we're talking about. It's something that comes from video processing imaging. The technical details are not relevant right now, but the basic concept is that at the two steps of separation in the spatial frequencies, we use a different method, which allows to minimize the noise amplification, basically. So if we go look at some in vivo results, this is the difference we can observe. So in the first video, you see the reference image. In the second one, we have a standard amplification. And in the third one, we have a now optimized phase-based amplified motion. Now, we can see already that the last one, displays a lot less artifacts, right? It has less out-of-plane motion, as shown by the uniformity of the brightness and contrast throughout the whole brain. This whipping motion, I'm really sorry, I wish I had the pointer didn't work, but the whipping motion we see in the spinal cord, okay, is less exacerbating, is less strong, which leads us to believing that this might be a better technique. Of course, we can also quantify parameters such as the signal-to-noise ratio. These are maps produced using 5 sequential frames, and we can see how the phase-based AMRI has a better signal-to-noise ratio compared to the standard technique and also reference image. But I mean, we need some more quantitative way of assessing the trustworthiness, let's say, of this algorithm, okay? Because as you saw before, if we use two different algorithms, we're going to see a spinal cord moving more or less. So which one is true movement and which one is amplifying just in a wrong way? To answer that question, our colleagues performed 2 digital phantom simulations. The concept is very easy. You take a 2D disk or a, let's say, a bar, which, if you ask a physicist, would be the modeling for a cerebellum and a spinal cord, you know, in the most simple thinkable of ways. You apply them a known motion, very simple, a sinusoidal, whatever you like, that you control. And then you apply blurring, intensity variations, you add Riesian noise, you mess the signal up, let's say, in order to then feed the movie to the amplified MRI algorithm and see what type of movement is, let's say, predicted, okay? And we were very, well, they were very reassured in seeing the simulation results, because it turned out that the phase-based amplification is both linear and non-position dependent, so it doesn't change within different brain areas. And now with this knowledge in mind, we can go look at a couple of other interesting parameters, let's say characteristics. Here you see a normalized standard deviation map for the reference, the standard AMRI, and the phase-based AMRI. Here it's an average of each voxel over time. And what we see is that in the phase-based AMRI, we are able to detect much finer movements, even very far away from the cerebellum and the spinal cord, even going up to the cortex in the areas of the brain that typically move the least due to blood pulsatility, and hence, you know, we see that this technique is really very sensible. Another advantage of phase-based AMRI is that it allows to be selective in which frequencies we decide to enhance or attenuate for that regard, which is relevant if we want to go look at the physiological system, because of course different harmonics of motion might be caused by different types of motion, right? If we have blood flow against rigid motion, for example, or CSF might be different. So in this case, we can go and selectively enhance the frequencies that are most relevant to us. And then to sum up and conclude, why am I presenting this today in an MRE workshop? Well, it's because we would like, we hope for the future, to be able to turn this technique from the qualitative type of assay that it now is into something more quantitative to eventually manage to acquire mechanical properties with it. So we need, in order to do that, to perform significant validation steps, obviously. We're going to need to compute the displacement and the stiffness maps and compare them against gold standards. Some published work from Weaver and colleagues used cardiac motion as an intrinsic activator already in phase-based MRE, so that's an important reference for us. But of course, such an approach will also create a number of interesting challenges. One issue with phase contrast imaging is that when you try to track motion at a very low frequency, and we're talking here of 1 hertz, right, more or less, with blood pulsatility, that you have very long echo times, you can't image, basically. So we might go into trying to use fractional encoding techniques proposed by Professor Sack and his group, or we're going to have to think of approaches, let's say, to tackle this problem. Not to mention the fact that we know the mechanical response of the brain is very much rate dependent. So when we go at such low frequencies, the inversion might also become problematic if we don't take into account poroelastic properties of a brain as compared to, for example, a standard linear inversion approach. So to conclude, AMRI, we believe amplified MRI has the potential, hopefully in the near future, for becoming a viable complement to MRE. It already now allows us to qualitatively visualize very tiny motions in the brain at a microscale level during cardiac cycle. And it also already has a lot of interesting and relevant clinical applications, especially in the direction of diagnostics for Chiari malformations or hydrocephalus or all those pathologies in which big changes in the hydrostatic pressure and in the physiological flow, let's say, change the nature of these micromotions in the brain. With this, I'd like to thank you for your attention and especially acknowledge the work of Itamar Terem, who's the main author here, under the guidance of Samantha Holdsworth at Stanford Radiology and all our funding agencies. So thank you very much. Sorry?
Is the AMRI 2D or is it a 3D volume?
It's a 2D volume. Yeah.
Hey, so in the brain you've got like solid motion and fluid motion and in a particular location.
Yeah.
Like if you got blood flowing through a vessel, the fluid's moving at a different rate to the solid. What sort of weighting do you think your technique has towards that? Are you like more tied to the
Sorry,
fluid?
I didn't hear the second part.
Are you more? Is the displacement that you measured more tied to the fluid motion or the solid motion, like the?
You don't have to think of it in those terms because this is a technique that doesn't really necessarily have to do with the system at work and the physics of it. You can use this algorithm on the video of a sleeping baby, and you're going to see the breathing patterns in the chest. So this technique is non-sensitive to different to what's really happening in the different parts of the video. It just takes a pixel-wise approach. It looks at the intensity values over time. So it in that sense, it's non-sensitive. It's both are equal, let's say.
Okay.
Both fluid and liquid phase.
But like
whether the real movements are more. The real movements are, of course, caused by the blood flow, indeed. So, yeah, in that sense, without the fluid phase, we wouldn't see anything. Yeah.
It's just for our poroelastic inversion, we've been looking for a way to try and separate those two, because when there's two different components moving and you've only got one measurement, it's really difficult to tell, like, what...
Right, yes, and that's going to be one of the problems, exactly.
Yeah. No, there's also, like, a really big advantage of having a technique like this, if you can know which one is... If you know it's a solid motion, then it makes the inversion a lot easier.
Yeah.
Anyone else? All right, let's thank Gloria again.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. I also had the same problem.